Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm here with Sarah McDewling, and we're delighted to be sitting across from Caroline Overington to talk about her new book, The Lucky One.
Hello, John.
Hello, Caroline. Welcome.
Thank you so much. This is my first podcast with you.
We've done video before.
We have done video before, but I think podcasts are the way of the future.
Well, it's much freer.
She says from after everybody else has been onto them for a year. I'm a little older than normal.
You're pointing in the right direction. Come on. We're the podcast Kings and Queens now here at Booktopia, and we've been doing it for a while, and we find that people are more comfortable.
Cameras off,
comfortable.
But also it's easier for the listener at the end, because you can do it at the gym and you can do it in the car and you can do it while doing your power walk, which I personally do not do. But if you were a power walking type, you could do the power walk.
So you've written a book?
Look, I think...
Podcasts are awesome. Let's talk about the book.
Let's talk about the odds. I've written a book, and it's called The Lucky One, and it has a bright orange cover. And this is important, because the last book, The One Who Got Away, had a bright neon yellow cover, neon orange. The next one will have a bright neon pink cover, and then we'll have a bright neon blue cover. So do you know, have you ever seen those containers of highlighters?
Yeah.
They're going to be like that.
Yeah.
But they're not all sequels. It's a set, but not sequels. So you can read any one of them at any time. And there's just in each one, one single line, which I understand you missed.
I missed it.
You missed.
I was too
that
far
refers
up
to the other books. And so you have to be, it might be the label on a bottle of wine is the same. But it's just because I have some people who read all my books, and it's really for them, because they're my super fans, and I really, you know, appreciate them. They, you know, a book comes out, they go and get it straight away, they read it, I get feedback from them online, or they write to me, it's fabulous. And it's really a gift for them, because I know they're reading closely, and I think that they're going to be able to pick it up. And for the average reader who's maybe reading one of my books for the first time, it's not going to matter, but for the super fans, they're going to love it.
Well, you've got...
Easter eggs for the super fans.
Yeah.
Yes!
You've got far more fans now. The success of the last book was enormous.
It was enormously successful. And I mean, you're a bookseller. What do you put that down to? I think, like for me, I think people loved the book. They loved not being able to guess how it was going to end. I heard that a lot from people, that they loved the idea that they could give it to someone and say, you are never going to guess the ending. And so then they felt confident giving it to other people, and that word of mouth took off a little bit. I think that helped. And maybe also, and this is embarrassing, I've been around for such a long time that maybe you get to the point where people have kind of heard your name, like, oh, have you read any of Caroline Overington? No, no. But if enough people over a period of 10 years say that, then maybe you might think, oh, okay, I'll give it a try. And that could be, like, it just hit that tipping point.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's sort of the momentum has picked up. But I think also it was the way the book was written. I think it's that that page-turning... I think I got the feeling that you ramped it up a little bit. You went, I'm going to make sure that everyone has to turn next page, find out what happens and race through this book as a much faster read than anything you've done before.
And I had in mind having a bit more fun, because some of my very early novels from, say 8-9 years ago were pretty heavy going, as you know, like pretty heavy going social commentary on things that are going wrong here in Australia. And this time, with this last book and this current one, The Lucky One as well, I just thought, you know, we can have a bit of fun, which is dangerous. As we were saying outside before, like, we're talking about corpses. But it's not real. It's a book. It's a novel. It's fun. You're meant to pick it up, read it, chuck it out, get the next one, read it, enjoy it, pass it on to a friend. So I think it's okay to have a little bit of fun.
I think it's a real skill, though, to be able to balance that dark humour with the serious subject.
I hope so. I hope people are not like, you're so disrespectful to that corpse. That is actually true. The characters in the book are very, very disrespectful to that corpse.
And it is dark and thrilling and suspenseful, but it's also very funny.
I'm glad, yes. And parts of it, when you're writing it, you do think, oh my goodness, maybe I should be a bit more serious. But the thing about writing a novel, and especially a thriller, is because it's not real, I think you can afford to be a bit light. So there's darkness that people have to be a bit horrified, but in a good way. So it's not like a horror film. Like, I can't even sit through a horror film because they're too horrifying. Whereas with this, because it's a thriller as opposed to a horror genre, I think you can be a bit light.
There's plenty of... There's some horrific stuff in there. It's like... we're making it sound like a delightful romp, and it is in this weird macabre sort of way.
Well, somebody did describe it to me the other day for the first time, and I hadn't heard that before, as a little bit gothic.
Yeah.
Now, because there's a castle in it. And I think once you've got a castle in your book, you are starting to get into gothic. And I had never thought of it as a gothic book. I had never thought of that before. And the castle, I just thought, well, it is... It's kind of creepy. It's about 100 years old, so it's not like it dates back, you know, centuries or anything. So it's about 100 years old, but castles are, by their nature, I think, a bit creepy. So the idea is you've got this big estate that's been in the same family, big family, for a long time, and it's got these two properties on it, and one of them is brand spanking new and glass and steel, and that's where the family lives and is sort of responsible for some of their misfortune because they couldn't really afford to build it and they had to borrow to build it and they shouldn't probably have built it, but they did. So that explains a little bit why they have to sell. But the original property, the castle, is still there. And I think that's what adds to the light and the shade in the book, the idea that you've got the old castle with all its memories hiding all these secrets, and then you've got this kind of new house in which the family lives.
The setting of this book is so great. I had not heard of Paso Robles before. I googled it to see if it was a real place.
It's a real place. Yeah, it really is a real place.
You made it seem so real. And I also googled to find out if there was a castle there.
Is there a castle there?
Not that I was able to find out.
No, I don't think there is. No, oh goodness, I hope not. People will say, we've never done that to a body in our lives. That's right. No, but Paso Robles is a real place. And it is a real place that I visited with very, very dear friends of mine called Christina and Carrie, who are Californian girls, who the book is dedicated to. They're friends. And that we went on a wine tour up there because it is a wine drinking region, and there's lots of vineyards. So if you can imagine it, it's rolling hills in California, halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco. From the tops of those hills, you can see the Pacific Ocean. So it's extremely beautiful, very lush and green, and with lots of clay in the soil. So the soil, when you walk on it, kind of sticks in that heavy way to your shoes. Mm-hmm. And it's also one of those towns, like, people will definitely recognize this as a concept, that was a very old town at one point with a lot of ranchers who ran cattle in the hills that has been sort of dragged into the 21st century because the foodies have arrived. And they've arrived with their organic olive oil and their smashed avocado and their pizza ovens, you know, they're doing wood-fired pizza ovens and things like that. So you've got the sort of clash between the old style cowboys, and they still, in Paso Robles, they still have Pioneer Day, where people, a bit like the Easter Show, bring their cattle into the main street and march down the main street, and the local school will come and the marching band will be there and they'll be doing bat and twirling and they'll have the big tuba, and it's a real place, and it's essentially small town America, but with this sort of new arrivals really changing the culture.
It really made me want to go there. I mean, not to be murdered or anything.
Well, we don't get to choose how we die, you know. You don't get that choice.
It would be a pretty cool place to die, I think.
With this, with your sort of the changing up and this new series, did you conceive of it all at the beginning, or did you write the first book and go, there's something in here that I can go on with? Or was it sort of a moment in your career when I'm going to do something differently?
The thing about it is, when I start, I never know who is the bad guy. I never know. And I hope I never will find out either, because, like, with, for example, The One Who Got Away, the bright yellow cover, I didn't really decide finally until maybe 5 minutes before we pressed the print button, because it could have gone either way, as you know. Like, there should be in each book up to five people that you think could be responsible for what's going on, because you want the reader to be in a state of anxiety about who might die and also who is responsible. So I never really know until the end. So but in terms of writing, deciding to write four at once, that came to me as a project that I wanted to do. I wanted to know whether or not I could sustain this idea, sustain the idea of writing four thrillers in 4 years, each of which kind of had a secret in it that related to the others, and have fun with it, and just make it so much fun as opposed to doing something. My aim was to get people to pick one up, read it, chuck it away, grab the next one, read it, chuck it away, grab the next one, read it, chuck it. That was my aim. Not to do something. I'm not trying to win any prizes. I'm not trying to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. Bob Dylan can have that. I just wanted people to have fun.
Well, I think you have achieved that. I wish that there was another one I could pick up right now. In terms of not knowing who the killer is when you write it, that amazes me. In this book, I think I suspected everyone at some point except for the one. I did not see that coming, but I considered everyone else.
Isn't that fantastic? Yeah. Isn't that absolutely fantastic?
So we were talking earlier about Lee Child. We both read.
Oh, yeah. I've become such an addict. I've become a terrible addict because Mum told me to read one. She said, you should go and read some Lee Child, because she's of the view, and I think she's right, that he knows exactly how to hold your attention.
But isn't that secret? Because he does the same thing as you do. He doesn't really know what's coming up. And so the writer doesn't even know what's coming up and how it's
then how end. Can anyone else guess?
Yeah, how can anyone guess?
Exactly.
And is that the secret?
And that's right. With Lee Child, I just think he has mastered the idea that you can sit down not knowing what it is you're going to do that day. Like, when I sit down to write, I don't think to myself, okay, so today is the day I have to write the chapter where this and this happens, because I just don't know. I just open the computer and off we go. And sometimes I'll be surprised. I'll be like, really? She's going to do that? and then she has done that. So it's really great. But he is, I mean, the genius at it. And I have become such a Lee Child fan, it's almost embarrassing. And I've also done weird things, like, you know, Googled him, read his Wikipedia page and looked up pictures of him. You know, I've become something like a super fan.
Yeah.
And I understand he's got a new book coming out at Christmas. I'm excited. It's,
he's got short stories coming out soon as well. So there's a double hit for Lee Child this year.
He must just write all year, nonstop.
Oh, we know how he writes. We read
that's
and
right.
Richard Said Nothing, the bizarre book. But they, you know, the art of the thriller writer, and it seems to me obvious now, having spoken to both of you two, is that passing on the secret can't happen.
It can't happen.
You can't. You don't know.
Because you don't know. Exactly.
That's just a killer.
Although the thing is, what's interesting about it is once you've decided. So once you get to the end and you've decided, okay, so this is how it's going to end, then you have to go back to the start and make sure that works.
Yeah.
Because sometimes usually your editor will say, but that can't be because of this. And mm-hmm. so then you'll have to go back to page 86 and take something out.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of a dance that goes on there, that you have to kind of make sure that this person was at that place at the right time, because otherwise, didn't you say that they were somewhere else? Yeah, so all of that has to... Although sometimes I've read books. Haven't you read books where occasionally you've thought, but that can't be because haven't picked it up? Yeah.
And so we spoke about your earlier books. And as far as I can recall, a lot of that, a lot of the ideas for those sort of books came from experiences that you had in court.
And
the research you did around those sort of... Is it the
Are
writing?
You going to ask me if no. I've killed anybody?
No. All crime writers have done that just for research. It's just obvious.
The stuff that comes down in this
book. You have to know. it's more to do with, because I get to interview a lot of writers, and I like to see writers who've been doing it for a while get into a sort of a stride and get more confident, and sort of the research becomes, in a sense, less, because you're building up this knowledge of how things work, and then you can be more creative and go out in limbs and sort of leave behind the side of the pool. The side of the
Do
pool
you know
is
what?
Research.
I think that what you have just described there is incredibly astute, John. I think that is incredibly intelligent thinking about exactly the process that you don't even know you're going through, and you've witnessed it. You've seen it with other people, and it seems like you've recognized it in a way maybe that I hadn't until you just said that is exactly right. In the beginning, you're hanging to the side of the pool, and that's a beautiful way to describe it, because you want it to be believable, you want it to be relatable, you want your characters to be real, so you draw a lot on what you know and on real life. And then as you get more confident and you start to sell more and more people say they like your books, you start to let go of the edge of the pool. You've worded it perfectly. And then you think, okay, well, I'm going to just, as in this case, thrash around and have a ball, make some splash, and just... And yes, you've encapsulated that perfectly. And it's really interesting to me that you think, so other writers do that. You've seen that development.
You get that effect where they start to believe in themselves and they can write fiction.
Right, without having to have those anchors. And what's interesting to me is having a recent convert to Lee Child as well, is I feel that in him, and he's a master. I feel that his later books... 100 times better than his first books, which are very good. They are very good, but even he is getting better.
Yeah, well, in that Reacher Said Nothing book, which is a book about Reacher writing a book, Lee Child writing a book, you get that feeling because he's not looking up stuff when he's doing Make Me.
No, he's not.
But you get the feeling he had done the past.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because you want to be... That's right. I was very conscious in the beginning when I first started out of thinking... of knowing that many of the things that happened in those books actually happened in real life. Whereas I assure you, I don't know anyone who has done what they've done in The Lucky One.
There's not a castle in Paso Robles.
No, there's no castle. That's right. But no, so it's... Yeah, that's interesting to me. But I feel like definitely someone could have done that and we just haven't caught them yet. And I guess that's true too. Like the issue in The Lucky One, so the idea that you have this big estate and a big family, that issue of inheritance, right? That's very real for people. That's very real for a lot of my readers. There will be people in the Australian community whose family have owned a beach house forever or have maybe come from the land or have come from a family that has already divided up their property over the years and there's nothing left. And that's a very real situation and it's in this book. So you have a big property. They're really broke. Some people want to sell. Some people don't want to sell. And then, of course, when they ultimately do sell, and they sell very early on in the book, that's not a surprise. They sell, and then, of course, all these corpses start to turn up. And I think for a lot of Australian families, they're going to be, well, that is not so far outside the realm of possibility.
Thank you very much for joining us, Caroline.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
It's been probably one of our best podcasts. I think it was a bit crazy in the end, but...
But we'll fix that. We can fix that.
You can buy all of Caroline's books on booktopia.com.au right now, and I suggest you should.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.